Hello and welcome to episode 219 of The Cool Room. I'm your host, David Griffiths. Hopefully you're all out there in podcast land enjoying some really good beers as summer turns to autumn here in Australia. Some of the styles of beers that I particularly love starting to come onto the market. Lots of good things to talk about today and a little preview of some things coming up in the future. On today's show, we're kicking off with Sam Evans. He's from Modus Operandi Brewing that many people in Australia will know well. They've got a really interesting project at the moment they're doing with a Ukrainian brewery to help them raise some funds so that they can relocate because of the Russian invasion. So an interesting story there. And then we're going to go and talk to Michael Cooney, who's the secretary of the Celtic Club in Melbourne. And he had the fun task of going and buying a new pub for the club. So it sounds like a really fun thing, doesn't it, to get out there and get to buy a pub to go and kick the tires of a whole lot of venues here in Melbourne. We'll find out from him when we have a chat whether it was as much fun as it sounds, but a really interesting project. They've now bought a pub, the Wild Geese. People will know as formerly the Sarah Sands. They're in Sydney Road, in the very edge of Brunswick, and a quick shout out before we get underway with that part of the show that they have a really fun looking St. Patrick's Day coming up. So if you're in Melbourne and looking for a venue to go and enjoy St. Patrick's Day, you're not going to get anything more authentically Irish than the Celtic Club at the Wild Geese there, the old Sarah Sands. Look, we've got a heap of other fun things coming up. We've got Fixation Brewing coming onto the show into our live Thursday night Zoom room on March the 14th. So make sure you grab our packs from our online store for that one. And then the week after that, we have Hop Hen Brewing. So Fixation, very much our iconic Melbourne brewery. There's lots of fun things to talk about. It's been years, literally, since they've been properly on the show. And then Hop Hen, one of the up-and-comers here in Melbourne. So two really fun shows that we've got coming up in our live Zoom room. Grab the links from our Facebook and come and join us live or listen to the podcast versions later on. You can grab the beers for that from our Shopify store. You can also go and check out some of the special $25 tasting packs we have for some of the shows that we've done recently. You can grab those beers, have them delivered to your house, and then listen to the podcasters and me talk to the brewers. We had the Zythologist on recently, Hard Road Brewing, plenty of others. Go and check out all of those things. And speaking of things to check out, if you haven't checked out our YouTube channel, go and do that. Some people prefer to listen to their podcasts on YouTube. You can go and do that, and you can see other bits and pieces that we record and that we think are fun over on that channel as well. A really good way to stay in touch with us. Look, let's get underway with today's show. As I say, two interesting guests doing interesting and positive things in the world of craft beer. Let's go and start our chat with Sam. Well, we're joined now by Sam Evans. Sam is the digital marketing manager up at Modus Operandi. And I can't believe how long it is since Modus has been on the show. It was June 2020 when they were last on the show. Go back and check that out. It was Series 3, Episode 24, back when we used to count things like that rather than just raw numbers like this, Episode 219. Sam, good morning and welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning to you too. Glad to be here.
We're both a bit croaky because it's 9 o'clock in the morning when we're recording this. We're in coffee mode rather than beer mode, but we've got some great beers to talk about this morning. And well, Sam, for international listeners in particular, just give us the Modus story in, you know, 30 seconds or less if you can manage that, because it's quite a big story now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I can go way back when, before Modus was even founded. So essentially, husband and wife, super duo, Grant and Jazz Warren, they traveled for about 6 months around the US. They hopped into a beat up old RV that they took around with them, visiting all sorts of different breweries in the United States, got super inspired to bring a lot of that exciting US energy here to Australia. They set up shop in 2014 in Mona Vale, Northern Beaches in Sydney. And they, just went stride to stride, beer to beer, and were releasing some real great Kraken beers. And then fast forward all the way to A few years later now. It was roughly about 8 years after that. And we've got a new brewery up here in Merriweather. So we're doing a lot of the production out of Merriweather now. We've got this huge sustainable brewery and venue, really is a sight to behold, has won architectural awards for its sustainable construction, totally green energy here as well. It's really a culmination of their dreams coming together. Still have that old tin shed brewery out at Mona Vale, which we love so dearly, the OG home. But it's great to be here in sunny Merriweather as well.
So I reckon when Motors was last on the show, we were probably, just sort of looking forward. It was just the beginning of COVID, and Merriweather was probably just a bit of a dream at that stage. But there's always been a strong sort of ethical stance from the brewery, hasn't there? You've always wanted to do things environmentally the right way, and take on good causes, which is in one sense what we're going to be here to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's the point of doing good business if you can't support a mate in need, if you can't look after the environment around you, if you can't make it do some good to the world?
Exactly right. And well, that brings us right to the point, doesn't it? That we're here today to be talking about the Cannet, which is the one that's the collab effectively with 10 Men Brewing over in Ukraine. What can you tell us about the story that's led to the beer? But we do need to talk about the beer itself, of course.
Of course. So essentially, the story there is part of my role. I look after a lot of our limited release programs. So I kind of get the fun part of trying all the different beers in the market, seeing what people are into, and then trying to come up with a plan for the year on what kind of limiteds we come out with seasonally. Part of my challenge to myself is I recognized that there were a lot of people doing some really cool things locally with local brewers. And I thought, well, there's possibly some really cool international brewers from places that we don't actually often hear about. So I challenged myself to look outside of the normal areas that we would think about when we think of craft beer. And I started looking through and stumbled upon Ukraine. And I thought to myself, well, surely there's breweries in Ukraine, right? So I had a quick look around and spotted 10 Men Brewing being one of the more like talked about breweries in the Ukraine. They do some really cool things. I'm not sure if you've seen what they've done, but they've got a series called Not for Breakfast, which is really interesting. It's their take on some quite sweet, delicious beers. You've got everything from like raspberry cheesecakes to like blueberry acai bowls and things like that. It's they go quite crazy with it, right? And so I just really fell in love with a lot of their design, a lot of their brewing philosophy, and then started to try to piece together their story. So I reached out to them and said, hey guys, love what you're doing in the brewing world, love the direction you've been going in. Do you want to do something together? And once we started talking and I got to meet the 10 men and women of 10 Men Brewing and have a good chat to them and talk through translators and all that, it really became evident that they had a story that was really quite compelling. Their journey was incredible, with everything going on in Ukraine at the
Of course.
moment.
Yep.
So I saw that as a fantastic opportunity to collaborate with them, but not only that, but to do some good with them. And that's why we ended up with Cannet, and wanting to donate $5 per case back to them and a dollar per schooner, to help them rebuild.
Well, and tell us a little bit of that story and why they need to rebuild without, going into all of the geopolitical stuff. Pretty obviously, there's a whole lot of turmoil over in Ukraine at the moment, but why do they need that fundraising at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So they used to be in this small town on the border of Russia, so still in the Ukraine, but in the northeast section of the Ukraine, possibly one of the closest towns you can be to Moscow before you actually hit that Russian territory. And unfortunately, it was one of the first places hit by that Russian invasion. So essentially, they were booted out of their home. They had to flee about 14 hours west. They went west past Kyiv to a small town of Lviv, which is still a few hours away from Kyiv on the west there. And now they've set up shop in Matesbury. So they're in some relative safety at the moment, but I know even in their small town, they've experienced some turmoil there as well. But they are in a mode where they're trying to raise some funds to try to really build what they're calling a brew hub. They don't just want it to be, oh yeah, we're a brewery that sells beer, let's make some money. They actually want to establish like a community hub to try and bring people together and bring a slice of normality back to the region, somewhere that people can get a bit of hope back.
A fantastic thing. We know that, you know, the beer community right across the world has some fantastic people in it and very supportive of each other. So it's fantastic to see not just you're working with them, but that they've got that ethos and attitude as well. I think is fantastic to see. Tell us about what's in the can, because people aren't just going to be buying an empty can and donating money. They're going to be buying a can of deliciousness. So what's actually in there?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we were collaborating with them, we looked at a lot of their recipes and we looked at like their style, but they also really wanted to appeal to what Australians love to drink. So recognizing that as we're in the thick of the summer period, we're just getting out of it now. But the conversation was in that thick of summer period. Maybe we didn't want something so heavy as what their Not for Breakfast series is like. But what they do have, which we found rather incredible, is they have this really great hazy base recipe that they use for a lot of their IPAs and their NIPAs. So specifically, they've got a New England IPA called Another Day Closer to Victory. And there's a series running along the same line with that same kind of naming structure. And so they sent that recipe to us. And the really interesting thing that we discovered was that they, because the supplies over there are very limited, they have to be very careful with how they use their hops. So they have this really unique dry hopping technique that allows for, you know, a less is more approach where you can still get some really juicy flavors out of the hops that we've chosen without just overburdening it with like full on hop flavor. So we're using El Dorado, we're using Citra, we're using Mosaic, and those are three very juicy hops. You're getting a lot of tropical fruit out of that. And we've been able to use this same dry hopping technique in order to really make those fruit flavors shine without getting like super hop through it or any kind of risk of hop burn, that kind of thing. So the hazy pale ale in the can that you're getting is going to be like real juicy. It's going to be real smooth. There's going to be like no hop burn at the end of it. There's going to be no like real overstated bitterness. It's just going to be real smooth, real sessionable, something you can have a couple of cans of and be like, yeah, that's a great hazy pale.
A great hazy pale with a for a great cause. Look, before we tell people where to find it, just tell us a little bit about the can design, because obviously the colours there are significant, but you guys have changed around your canning sort of designs a bit of late, and they're absolutely singing.
So when I hopped on board and I started looking through our limiteds program, I realized that the designer we work with is just, he's absolutely talented at specifically hand drawing a lot of the designs. So he hops on his little Wacom tablet and he gets his little pen out and he does all of these like super detailed hand drawn pieces of artwork. So I really wanted to lean into a lot of that. Specifically, when you look at the can, you're looking at those contrasting yellow and blue colors, which, if someone's not familiar, are the colors of the Ukrainian flag. But then you've also got that like very Eastern European, Ukrainian style cartoon demonstrating the coming together of people to rebuild a brewery. And we really wanted to highlight that element that there's a diverse group of people here all lending a hand to help out.
Look, that's a fantastic story that you've got behind the beer and a fantastic cause. We are very happy to be helping you to promote it. How do people get their hands on this beer? Normally, I tell people to go to the Cool Room Shopify store, but in this case, we're saying go to the Motors store. How do people track this beer down?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can hop onto our website at modus.beer. That's the best way you'll find it. Take a look in our limited store range and you'll see it right there or on the front page down in our new releases section. That's going to be the best way to go ahead and grab it. We are gaining momentum with this. A lot of people are starting to, you know, stock it, but in order to really get those funds going to Ukraine, that's the best way to do it.
Is there anything else fun in the limited section that people might be finding when they're clicking on there? Feel free to tell the story of the other fun things that are in there.
So I'm not sure if you've had a look at it yet, but we have just released a pre-order phase for the Trash Taste Pale Ale.
I did see that
Now,
this morning when I was
yeah.
looking around.
So the quick 2 second story behind that is we've partnered with Giant Influencers Trash Taste. So they are a podcast that's specifically in that video gaming nerd kind of realm of podcasting. They're top 10 in the world, and we have collaborated with them on a Pale Ale release exclusive to Australia. So very proud to bring that here.
That looks awesome. Look, you seem to have the best fun job in the world at the moment, sort of going out there, picking styles, picking other collaborators. What styles are you seeing emerging? We have these conversations a bit here in the podcast about, what can we be looking forward to in 2024? Are there new styles out there or new interpretations on styles that you're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, so I think the crafty lager is coming back in full swing. People really recognizing the strengths of what some really good malts can do in a lager. You're getting some real nice pilsners coming through. I saw and tasted a really good West Coast pilsner the other day from a local mob, and that was great. So I think you can see more and more of that. Bit of a sign of the times, bit of a sign of the wallet. And yeah, I'm just excited to see what people can push themselves to do in that spectrum.
I would completely agree. Even though we're heading out of summer and towards the cooler months, those styles seem to be really singing at the moment and coming out from all sorts of fun breweries. Sam, thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate the fact you've got up early, you've gone for your run, you've got yourself ready. And again, go and check out modus.beer to support the cause, mate. Thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure now to be joined by Michael Cooney, the secretary of the Celtic Club in Melbourne. We're upstairs at a venue that many people will know as the Sarah Sands Hotel, but we're going to be hearing all about its revolution and its change into something very new and exciting. Michael, welcome back to the Cool Room. It's not your first time here, is it?
It's not my first time at the Cool Room, no, David, but thank you for having me back. I don't always get let back, so thank you.
You don't always get let back. We don't always acknowledge you by name when you're in the audience asking tricky questions of brewers. You're out there back in the previous 220 episodes. Let's not dwell on that thought right now, because we're looking to the future and what an exciting future it is to talk about. Mate, you've just bought a pub. I mean, the club's just bought a pub, but you were one of the people who was involved in that deal, and that's what we're here to talk about today.
We have just bought a pub. I've been telling people all week, guess what, I just bought a pub, and they all make sort of some of the spluttering and amused and delighted sounds that you just made. It's a delightful period.
I splutter professionally. We might have even been downstairs to begin with. But look, it's such an exciting story. We had the official opening of the club last night. We're going to be talking about so many things over the next 20 minutes, half an hour or so. And we're going to get to St. Patrick's Day 2024. So make sure that you listen right through to get all the good gossip about the best place to be in Melbourne on St. Patrick's Day. But for people who have not heard of the Melbourne Celtic Club before, can we just delve into that little bit of history first? Because it's a place with an amazing history.
It really is. The Celtic Club is Australia's oldest and most successful Irish club. It's been a feature of Melbourne society since the 19th century. It was established by a group of founders who saw it as a way of bringing Irish people together to socialise and share. There's a wonderful, when you come and visit, you'll see the poster of the founders with a very large sign saying, discussion of religious subjects strictly prohibited.
it's something that most venues could actually do with having that sign up, I reckon.
So that's still a good idea. And it was originally a club of people who supported home rule for Ireland when the island of Ireland was entirely part of the British Empire. So it had that kind of national flavour. A venue and a place of gathering for more than 100 years, and now reinvented in Brunswick.
And I guess particularly for people who listen in from overseas, and we love our overseas listeners, it might be a bit hard to sort of get your head around how quickly, in terms of white settlement of Australia, the club was established. Because people sort of, I guess if you come from, Heinrich over there in Sweden and Norway might be going, what do you mean it's 100 years old? That doesn't sound like much. But for the city of Melbourne, as it is in terms of white settlement. It was very soon after settlement.
Look, that's right. The British Empire arrives on the Australian continent at the end of the 18th century and doesn't really have a... There's not a substantial population of white people running a colonial society in Victoria until the 1840s, really, and gold comes in the 1850s. So Melbourne then rapidly becomes one of the biggest cities in the British Empire.
Arguably the richest city in the world, if you believe the Lord Mayor, who I hear speak quite often.
It's a big city and a rapidly growing city by the 1880s, and a city with a very large Irish population, a very large population of people who've either been born in Ireland and moved to Australia in that period, or who are, even by then, of Irish parentage. And so there's both an Irish urban working class in Melbourne City and also an Irish genteel group, I suppose you'd say. Some famous judges and others in this period are Anglo-Irish, as it were. So there's a thriving Irish community in Melbourne, really, from the time of its foundation.
And for those of us that used to sort of drink in Melbourne in the 1990s, perhaps even a little earlier than that if we were misbehaving, the old Celtic Club in the city was one of the sort of best-known venues in the area. Did you drink there yourself? Do you have memories of the old Celtic Club?
I do. So I grew up in Canberra, as you know, and I won't bore you on that subject, but I love it. And
I mean, but was a nothing about Canberra is boring, is it?
No, it certainly isn't. But I've always been a regular visitor to Melbourne. And yes, the Celtic Club owned a hotel-style venue on William Street for many decades in the post-war period. I remember being there when Ireland went one goal in front of France in a World Cup match in 2016. I ran a couple of Australian Republic Movement campaign events there over the journey, and certainly a place that was very much a gathering place. You know, in the period before the internet, before mobile phones and all that sort of stuff, people who settled in Australia needed somewhere to go and find some other people who could help them get a start on a site or help them find a place to live. And also the club through that period was a place where Irish Australian people whose family, like mine, might have arrived from Ireland in the 1840s, gathered to tell and share the story. So it was it was an iconic venue in Melbourne, even in our lifetime.
And it was one of those sort of spots, like all good sort of club venues are, where you would sort of be out looking for the bathroom on the third floor and you'd suddenly run into some old bit of memorabilia that would catch your eye. I mean, it was an amazing sort of space with all the things that were tucked away, aside from the Welsh language classes, which, you know,
I remember well.
That made me the man I am today. I'd actually never attended one, to be perfectly honest. Everyone thought I should.
It was a venue with many stories, 100,000 stories, I suppose you might say, and a venue, yes, with a lot of... The club's got a substantial historical collection. And like all historical collections, you know, some items of sort of value to the actual historical record, objectively in a sense, and other items that are of really important sentimental value to the club membership because it was always there. That founder's poster I was talking about before is certainly in that category. You and I were just looking at a picture of Archbishop Mannix and the
It's
Irish
hard to turn around here without
era.
Seeing one or two of him. So.
Yeah, he's everywhere. I've been talking to one of his successors about getting up here to bless that. And we're sitting in the library next to beautifully indexed stories from Irish history and Oscar Wilde.
Some nice Seamus Heaney, one of my favourite poets in the whole world.
Famous Seamus, yeah. So that's right. When you in the Queen Street venue, that sort of had that feel. So people remembered very fondly.
And what we're really here to talk about today is sort of your experience of going out and buying a venue and, you know, what that was like. But I guess before we get to that, we've got to say, well, that venue had to be left behind and there were some changes there which sort of equipped you to go out and sort of go shopping, I guess.
That's right. Yes, in 2017, the club sold the venue in William Street, and that was ultimately a great financial deal for the club. And left us with a really strong balance sheet, so not many small not-for-profit, ethnic clubs, as it
all
were.
All bowls clubs
have got the legacy that we were left by 100 years of history and then by some really visionary decisions made at the time that set us up to have a future where we could have something amazing. And so in 2017 we left Queen Street. And you can Google what happened next, I suppose. But none of it was perfect, but here we are. And yes, in recent years, Patrick McGorry, who many would know as a former Australian of the Year and a very eminent Australian, Irish-born Australian in the field of mental health, as president of the club, has steered us through a period of reinvention and with a very specific goal to find a home for the club that would be able to be for the next 100 years what William Street was for the last 50. And so, yeah, here we are.
And this seems like a bit of a dream gig. Often I sort of say people who listen to the podcast have dreams of opening a brewery or things like that, but it seems like, you know, you get handed over the official Celtic Club bank account and get told, go and buy a pub. That sounds like a fantastic situation to be in. How many pubs had you bought prior to this one?
I've broken my duck. This is not the worst thing I've ever been asked to do, no. And is it a dream? I mean, the longer I've known someone, the longer they laugh when I tell them that I'm doing this.
I can understand that.
So, yes, it's look, it was it's fun. It's also, it was a big privilege and a big responsibility. If I was a high net worth individual who was doing it for myself, it'd be a fun hobby. But I'm really conscious that we've got hundreds of members and this, you know, long legacy and a really important future. So we took it pretty seriously. It was a big decision.
I'll edit that bit out just so it sounds like it's all been fun and that you're treating it very blasé. Don't worry about that.
Hi, members. So it was a big deal, it's a big job, but also, really exciting and fun. Like, it's, you know, it's felt like, yeah, well, it's like having the wedding registry and thinking, oh, what will we get them? You know, yeah, it's been exciting.
Do you have a hospo background? Do you have any of those sorts of things? I mean, I know that, you know, you've...
No, I've been a member of clubs and been a patron of licensed venues, my background's in politics as an advisor and writer, and more recently working in a similar role in a law firm in Melbourne. And so one of the most important things we did as a committee, to give you just a little board talk. Board talk is boring talk, as they say, but the club membership elects a committee every 2 years of volunteers, a president, a treasurer, a secretary, and so on. And we appointed professional staff to help us do this piece. So clearly we're ultimately accountable, and we had a lot of guidance and opinions. But the first thing we did was, right, what if we went and found someone who had some serious hospitality background, which we did in our CEO, Rob Clifford, who we're thrilled with. And Rob's headed home for the evening because he and his team have been...
They were here for the launch last night, which was pretty amazing. Yeah, we're going to come back to that.
And their next day off's Good Friday. So. So the first thing we did was hire a pro and get down to work.
It sounds like a much more sensible approach than the Flemington and Kensington Bowling Club took when they appointed a then philosophy teacher to take over the running of the venue, who, you know, even now doesn't know much about hospo and how to make things make money. But, you know.
That young kid work out.
Did you have sort of personal feelings about what you wanted in a venue when you set out? I mean, how did you even start the process?
Yeah, look, we started with a process of engaging our members and talking to them about what they wanted. I mean, I think we were pretty confident we knew what our members had wanted. Our members are pretty confident in expressing their opinions. And we heard the
particularly
message.
Particularly later on St. Patrick's Day. I guess. Sure.
They get louder and more confident, and that's great. So we kind of knew what we thought we were going to get out of that engagement. We spent a lot of time talking to our members. And our members wanted somewhere as close to the city as we could get. So we wanted to be as central as was practical. We definitely wanted somewhere which had a welcoming Irish feel to it. But also, we didn't want to be a stereotypical Irish pub, as it were. I like Irish pubs. Like, I've spent many a good night in Irish pubs. But we wanted to be something just a bit more distinctive than that. So a destination, a contemporary feel, and somewhere where members would feel welcome, somewhere where you could have a multi-generational gathering that would feel welcome. But on the other hand, something that would have a contemporary feel and that, I guess, a person arriving in Australia from Dublin would recognise as kind of contemporary Ireland. Like any migrant community that settles, you remember it when you left, you know. Mm. So something that reflected the diversity and vitality of contemporary Ireland, but also that reflected the long, warm, welcoming heritage. So what did that mean in practice? Like, we wanted good memorabilia and not memorabilia that you can see everywhere. we want to, and we've got some of that. Like, some of the stuff looks great, right? But you don't walk around and think, oh, there's Sonny O'Sullivan's training singlet. You see some things that are distinctive to the club's history and that you might not see in every Irish pub in Perth and Brisbane and Melbourne. We wanted somewhere which was a destination. I suppose Melbourne, I think, is quite good and has some of these you know, renovated pubs that have done a good job of preserving an authentic pub feel in the main bar and preserving a feel that it's a warm lounge feel in the dining areas and so on, but that also, yeah, feel like you can take your mum there and you can, you know, you can have maybe a business meeting or a business lunch that is not just a front bar.
Yep.
And I like a low bar, don't get me wrong, but like, we didn't want to be that, you know. So, so I think that balance was what we were after in a way, yeah.
And how many sort of venues did you make a long list, or did you go out there and talk to brokers? I mean, again, for people who have no experience of this stuff, who dream of doing it, what's it actually like when you go out and do it? Do you just sort of stand out the front with a megaphone and go?
So, anyone got a pub for sale? Yeah. We look, we made a so with our balance, we had some options, right? So we could, in theory, have acquired property and built something. Like, we had the capacity to do that, but we didn't want to wait 5 years. Basically, the membership had waited a long time. And we gave that some thought, and, you know, there is some land in the CBD that you could do that, actually, but it wouldn't stand up. We wanted somewhere basically large. Like, we were not after just a bar or a lounge or a kind of a members lounge. We definitely wanted something that could allow us to run a large event on St. Patrick's Day and so on, where many hundreds of members would gather, but also somewhere which is a home for language classes, historical
Welsh language classes.
Welsh language classes, yeah. There's more than one kind of Celt. you know, the rehearsals for Bloomsday in Melbourne. You know, a library, places where people can have cultural meetings, book launches, poetry readings, stand up comedy, whatever. So we were not after a one room Irish bar. We needed something like we have, which is a corner hotel site with more than one floor, basically.
So how many venues did you look at? How many did you kick
the tire?
That narrows
it down a fair bit, is the truth of it. So we looked at sort of over 4 years, really, I suppose we looked at half a dozen. And, you know, there's not that many for sale. There's not a whole lot of options like that. When you're talking about a large-ish venue on, you know, of the kind I'm describing, like a pub in that sort of stricter sense, in central Melbourne, there's a handful in the CBD that would be worth talking to. And there's a handful close by the CBD like we are now. So we didn't look at many, and it sort of, in a weird way, it wasn't that hard a choice because there weren't many amazing options. Yeah.
And what was it like sort of dealing with the people who sell pubs? Mm. You know, what's that sort of process like? Were they like used car salesmen, or were they like, professionals who handed over the books?
It's interesting. So I guess there's more or less two kinds of pub owners, right? There's sort of family private operations that might only own a couple of venues or one venue.
I'm interested to see which of these I fall into. But yes, that's a...
And then on the other hand, there's some big corporations that, whether they're listed or not, but like large operations that run, that own and run or lease and run quite a lot of venues. So we found ourselves, we were looking at and talking to both. And a related question was, well, do we buy or lease? So that meant that there were like different ways of making the purchase and different agents and others to talk to, really. But it was like it's a really detailed process. There is a lot in it, but we didn't at all find it a haggling or salesman style thing. It was just there's a lot of sharpening the pencil and a lot of, you know, not just signing forms, but a lot of reassurance and a lot of, you know, survey and many, many things. But in principle and in thinking through what the options were, it wasn't complicated. We didn't feel like we were ever being sailed, you know.
Yeah. Did you come in and sort of kick the tires? Did you?
We did a little bit of what are they called? Secret chopper.
Yeah.
So the committee went round and the committee members who were free at the time went round and had a drink and just checked out basically a couple of places.
Made sure they weren't speaking in Irish accents or anything like that. we really quite unconvincing. You know?
Yeah, that's right. We went and I suppose partly we wanted to see what in thinking about a venue, what's the existing trade like what's the existing clientele. We weren't looking to take over an existing business and maintain that business. We were looking to take over a venue, and we knew we would redecorate and run our own business there. So it wasn't like we were buying a business. We weren't buying existing management or something like that. But you still know that anywhere you go, there's going to be a regular trade. We wanted to know a bit about that. Yep. And also have a look at the, you know, wash your hands in the bathroom and see if the taps worked and that sort of stuff. So we did that in, I guess, I can think of one, two, three, four venues, I guess. We had a catch up there and ate the chips and drank a beer and
I can always remember doing that for one venue that I bought, but we went to the venue over the road to begin with, to look at the venue that we were thinking of buying on the other side of the road. But the one that we'd walked into was so terrible, we gave up after about half a beer and went over the one we wanted to go. At least we've proven that the competition is
vulnerable. How we can beat them. Yeah. That's where we can outrun that beer. That wasn't one of the toughest bits. Sorry, dear, I've got to go out tonight and size up another hotel.
That's what you say you only looked at four or six, but I'm sure if I spoke to the missus, it seemed like you were out for about 3.5 years.
There were a lot of places that strangely weren't for sale, you know.
Are there any tips you'd give to people, whether they're buying on behalf of a large, you know, organisation, or whether they're just going out to look for themselves, now that you reflect on the whole process? Is there anything you sort of go, gee, I wish I'd known that at the start?
Yeah, look. Well, we definitely did the right thing having the professional management to steer us through the process. I think we had a good a picture in our head of what we wanted it to be, whether everyone would have written it down in the same way. But everyone, I do think if people closed their eyes, they were basically seeing the same thing. So it wasn't like we were saying, do we want to buy the Brothers in Collingwood, which is a small place, or do we want to buy... We knew we wanted to be... we're in Brunswick. We didn't want to be any further from the CBD than we are, than you and I are sitting now. That narrowed it down a bit. So it wasn't like anyone was like, what if we went out to the Ring Road, you know. We looked, I suppose, at South Melbourne, at Docklands. It would have been amazing to be in the CBD. It would be fun too. But so we had, that was pretty important. I suppose if you're buying for yourself, you know what your vision is, but you might still want to flush that out a bit. So that was there. I mean, as you may know, the 17th of March is an important date on the Irish calendar.
Even I'm across that.
And we were pretty keen to do what we're doing now, which is to be in the venue before the 17th of March.
Yep.
That's a very artificial deadline. It was clearly the right thing to do. I've got no doubt about that. But that definitely meant that all through the process of acquiring the venue or acquiring the lease and doing all the things, and then in turn all the operational things about enlivening the venue, it's not like we ever said, how long will this take, and then aimed for that date. Now, if you're the Celtic Club in 2024, that was the right call, but I wouldn't recommend that to anybody else who didn't really need to do that. Yep. I wouldn't say, let's open by grand final day and then work out what date it is in the calendar now. I would, you know, think about a little Gantt chart that told you it might take 3 months or 5 months or 8 months, and then...
You say that the number of venues that open, as did one of mine, you know, a bit after Christmas and miss out on all of that trade is amazing. Like, there's actually some times that you can make some money, and that may not be the concern of a club, I guess.
The flip side of that is that I suppose giving us we had a really clear deadline, and that probably... maybe it helped, you know, maybe we'd still be going 5 months later if we had every reason to cross every T and dot every I. It forced us to do the things we needed to do to get the doors open safely and in a welcoming way.
Yep.
And meant that we could work out that there are some things that could be sorted out the following week. I've got a folder in my email inbox, which is March the 18th.
But that's been there for years, I'm sure. You know, imagine in your world, I'm sure, just, you know, there are everything from the beginning of March just gets filed in March
18. Trim, you know.
So you've done the deal. We don't have to talk about the specifics of how all that bit works so much as now you've got it. What's the thing from there between the moment that you get it, which is sort of early January?
We were agreed in principle through December, really, and then there was a bit of, you know, T's and I's and all that sort of stuff, but we kind of got the keys, as it were, in January, yeah.
So what has to happen then, and was that, again, a fun experience, or was it sort of a, oh my God, now I'm, you know, living in a sleeping bag down here
It was fun once. not planning on moving again soon. There was a lot. Yeah, I mean, the staff and the executive team were sleeping down here for sure. And I think in our sort of scenario, like, I suppose it's like we're a board, you know, but on the other hand, we own a lot of it and we've got a lot of, so we've been in as much as we can, try to do the interesting balance of supporting our executive team and staff and, on the other hand, staying out of their way just a little bit. So, you know, we had a lot of weekly meetings. Once we had access to the building, we had some of those in here.
Yep.
Met some of the trades guys, you know, met the staff that were starting up, that were coming on through that process, you know, a commercial manager and a food and beverage manager, others coming in and starting. So making sure they feel supported and, like, we're barracking for them, basically. But then certainly on a regular Tuesday call. So we had a soft launch on a Friday night, back on Friday, the I can't remember.
It doesn't matter now. It's the all Friday lost before in the Friday before. Of Irish history.
Yeah, that's right. The Friday before, St. Pat's Day. And our regular Tuesday call on that Tuesday, I said, guys, do you need this call or would you really rather the 60 minutes to do whatever the thing is? And they didn't take long to say they would rather the 60 minutes to do all the things.
Yep.
So there was a bit of a mix of staying out of their way while they did all the things. But then they did all the things and we opened.
And we got to last night, which was sort of the official opening, which is not the St. Patrick's Day opening. It's not the soft launch.
It was the one in the middle of all of that. Yeah. Yeah, so yesterday, which was Monday, the Labor Day holiday here in Melbourne, we had a fantastic event. The Irish ambassador was present. The Irish Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, TD, was here. Our President, Pat McGorry, spoke and opened the place. We had a lovely ribbon cutting on the stairs that lead from the Wild Geese Hotel bistro at ground level up to the Celtic Club rooms upstairs. And hundreds of people, really. And,
it was packed. It was fantastic.
Had some local dignitaries such as yourself. And
many things. I'm not that.
And look, a lot of smiling faces and a lot of new members, but a lot of veteran members and people who've got fond memories and people who've been waiting a long time for a committee to bring them home. And a lot of people felt at home. It was a great occasion. And we're trading now, so you can come on in and have a Scotch egg and have a Guinness.
One of the questions I've sort of got for you is, you know, what's been the best bit of the process? Was last night the best bit of the process, or have there been other things along the way that you value out of the process?
The soft opening last Friday night with the staff and the suppliers and some of the families and stuff like that, and then getting in there and getting the first pint was pretty good.
Yeah,
okay. So there was. I wasn't always sure I'd get a pint of Guinness in the club. You know, that first time I was like, I've been aiming for that for a while. But yeah, last night was nice and a real celebration with the team in a way. Like, that was sort of the dressing room kind of event, I suppose. Yep. But then yesterday, just the members who've been so supportive, so loyal. And successive committees have drawn deeply on their loyalty, it would be fair to say. And they just were so gratified. We called last drinks and then, you know, there were still fiddles going for a fair while after there was no service. But people just sitting on the couches upstairs and downstairs and telling stories and singing a couple of songs too.
Was there a worst bit? I mean, I've got to sort of ask the question. You know, was there a bit where you went, why am I doing this? You know, I could just put on my fancy pants suit and go into my law firm and, you know, do something else with my life.
The moment when I was most ashamed was at the opening when one of the staff said to my wife, "Your husband's so calm. He's so composed. We're so grateful for that." And I remembered that I was glad that this staff member had not been on my not calm call quite recently. So it is true that, like, right at the end there was, like, I sent one Grumpy Graham email and I had one bad phone call.
That's not much, maybe not too bad.
Yeah. But no names, no pack drills, all on me. But yes, I do. Here's a lesson I would say. Don't go on an overseas holiday that you've been looking forward to for a fair while for 12 days about 28 days from launch.
Yeah, I mean, that's a...
Or if you're gonna, don't get annoyed that they keep texting you and WhatsApping you with things they need you to do, because that's what I was there for, so...
that sounds like pretty good advice for those in a position to take it. Look, you know what the podcast is called. You know our shtick. Did you get to peek into any cool rooms along the way? Did you see any things, you know, perhaps in shutdown pubs that alarmed you?
I wish I could say I had. It's interesting. I'm now the license holder, and on the end, I've got professional bar staff. I mean, I've done the RSA thing on video in my study.
We're not necessarily right across the legality of how the whiskey lockers work.
We're trying to work through all these operational matters. Yes. I've been behind the bar, which, you know, as a sort of a well-trained, my background as a drinker, as it were, isn't particularly in clubs, although I've been in clubs in the licensed club since living in the ACT, but also in messes in the Army Reserve, where I was active for many years ago, like literally last century, and a bit of that culture. And so there's like places you stand and places you don't stand, and think like you get it pretty drilled into you, like and rugby clubs, rugby union clubs, and stuff like that. So you sort of know where you're not to wear a hat and so on. So stepping behind the bar is like, ooh, like, am I really allowed to be here? Yep. Like, I probably am, actually. I'm supposed to be here a bit. So no, it's
quite... Have you actually poured a Guinness yourself
yet? I have not poured a Guinness myself
yet. Oh, see, that sounds like the kind of thing that I can take a little YouTube op for our YouTube that would be channel.
That moment may well come, yeah. I would hate to get it wrong.
Look, thanks so much both for your time tonight, for the invite for last night. Tell people what you've got in mind for St. Patrick's Day, and tell people how they can come and find the venue.
Come on down. So the St. Patrick's Day Festival, really, Friday the 15th, Saturday the 16th, and especially Sunday the 17th.
Sounds more and more like some of my wife's friends' birthdays, which now seem to go, it's stopped just being someone's birthday, it's now the festival of...
They get longer every year.
Exactly right.
That's right. So so the Wild Geese Hotel, Bistro, and the Celtic Club will be open. The rooms upstairs are the members' rooms. You're very welcome to join. It's it'll be even easier online soon, but it can be done, I promise. And the pub will be open all weekend, and it's a 7-day pub. We're trading tonight. Come on down, and there'll be music and dancing and many a tall tale and a long story. If you are, by the time you hear this, we'll have had our first pub choir.
Oh, is that right?
Pub choir.
You don't know how quickly I'm putting this out. Are they downstairs now warming
not
up?
Not downstairs now, but they'll be downstairs tomorrow night. So we'll have pub choir tomorrow night where people will be singing Zombie from Dolores O'Riordan's very popular sing-along Irish song. So that's a feature. So there's many ways to engage and come along, but over St. Pat's weekend, come on down. We are doing the things that need to be done to get open, and then doing the things that need to be done after we get open.
To show that you're open on the socials, yes.
I would not say the booking process is seamless yet, but there's a booking process. I wouldn't say the social presence is what it's going to be in a week or a month, but there is a social presence. So if you look for the Wild Geese Hotel on Instagram, we're there. If you look for the wildgeesehotel.com.au on the internet, you'll find that if you don't put a www or something, or delete the S from the HTTP or something, but anyway, don't go to the pub in Brunswick in Germany called the Wild Geese.
I mean, don't go there.
In fact, our friends listening in continental Europe, drop in and tell them we said hello.
Yeah, exactly
we're,
right.
Our social media teams are definitely going to be in touch.
We'll tag them in this episode. 100%.
We're looking forward to meeting those guys. They run a good joint, clearly. But yeah, come on down and book for lunch with your family, or bring in a couple of your mates off a site if you've just arrived, or anywhere in between.
It's a fantastic venue to both you, Michael, but the club as a whole. Congratulations. It's been a long process, and it's very special to be able to come back here into the space that's been a great pub over the years, and to see a great club now taking it over. So congratulations, my friend, and we look forward to many more pints down here in weeks and years to come.
Me too. Thanks for having me on.